What is up, degenerates? This is the QTR Podcast. Today is April 25th, 2019. Before we get started, this podcast is brought to you by my patrons. Patrons are people that sign up on Patreon. They donate a monthly recurring sum to help support the podcast. They keep me in business. They are the capitalistic engine behind this podcast, and I want to shout them out real quick. First and foremost are my friends over at Quantamize. Quantamize.com, Quantamize. It is an AI-powered research platform with over 10,000 stocks, options, and cryptos. It'll give you option strategies. It was just rated the number one alternative to a Bloomberg terminal. So if you don't want to shell out fucking $20,000 a year, check out Quantamize. And as a matter of fact, right now it is free. There is a link to Quantamize.com in the podcast description. Also, this podcast is brought to you by my friends over at Rumorhound. Rumorhound.ai is a very innovative new piece of AI software that allows you to try to help determine which rumors, specifically M&A rumors, have credibility. Chat rooms, Twitter, there's rumors every fucking day on all different types of M&A prospects. They pop up all the time. You see them especially in options flow rooms. And Rumorhound is a novel piece of software that actually helps you try to figure out which of these rumors are credible and which ones aren't credible. It looks at the sources that they come from and uses artificial intelligence to try to help you predict so that you can be on the right side of the trade instead of continually losing money, you fucking degenerates. I know you do. It's all right. I know you keep your losses to yourself. You don't tell anybody about them. Check the Rumorhound link out in the profile if you're ever thinking about trying something different. Finally, my friends over at Hella Bacon are also helping sponsor the podcast. Do you need to know anything about Hella Bacon other than that you got a bunch of guys down in Texas that will let you shoot machine guns out of a goddamn helicopter? Ladies and gentlemen, if you're interested in that, please check out their link also in the podcast description. Finally, I want to shout out some of the newest patrons of the podcast. These are retail patrons that have signed up since my last podcast. I want to acknowledge them, as I always do at the start of every podcast. First and foremost, let's say what is up to my friend William Davis. My friend CJ Carey, Born to Run, is in the house. Raz Van R is in the house. Robert A. Rasgiatis is in the house. What's going on, Robert? Richard Mitchell Penrod's in the house. Nicholas Parks checked in. Andrew Lidner checked in. Dimitri Paleocrasis also checked in. My homeboy Gerald and Justin Vaccaro are here. Rand Cannon and Paul Brennan. What's up? I see all you guys. Also want to shout out some of my older patrons, people that have been down for a while, like my brother Matt Campbell, my friend Trinker, my friend Rob Ciari is still back in the house. What's up, Rob? I think he left and then come back, but I appreciate that. Frederick Schott is in the house. JD Tita, Sean Dickinson, and Brian Hall are all still hanging out. Appreciate the shit out of you guys. Robert Cope from Cope Systems checking in with Philip Yelzin and Kevin Boyette. Really appreciate you guys. Darius Kordonsky, my homeboy Chris Boas, always checking in. Also, my homeboy Chris Bede is in the house. Big fucking baller stepping through. Two more things, then we'll get on with the podcast. You ready? The first is that I am not an investment advisor. If you haven't figured that out by this point in the podcast, there's probably not much hope for you as a critical thinking human being. But I hold no licenses, I hold no registrations, and I hold nothing. Folks, I am not a professional. Do your research elsewhere. It's very simple. D-Y-R-E, if you can't remember that. Do your motherfucking research elsewhere. I left out the MF, but then I didn't. So what do you think about that? Finally, there's a 2-drink minimum for this podcast, especially when I have a degenerate like motherfucking Mark Spiegel in the house like I do today. So make sure you have a drink. Make sure you're relaxing. Please don't listen to this podcast when you're at a high-stress situation at home, you know, walking around, just thinking about how much you hate life in the middle of work, you know, getting stuffed into your locker in high school, whatever it is. I don't want you listening when that's happening. I want you to be relaxed. I want you to be calm. I want you to be under control, kicking back, having a cold one, maybe sparking one up, whatever it is you have to do. Ladies and gentlemen, all I want you to do is just sit back, relax, and just kick it right here with my friend and fellow degenerate, Mark Spiegel. What's going on? Mark Spiegel of, I would say, of Stanfield Capital, but really people just know you from your filthy mouth on Twitter. So how does that feel?
It's, you know, it's great to be here. And, you know, it's funny. I was just thinking, I did Yahoo TV a little while ago, and I did Cheddar TV yesterday. I mean, okay, it's not real TV, but you know what I'm saying. And I so much like more being on this podcast because, you know, I can scratch myself, I can pick my nose, and nobody knows. I'm not on – there's no camera. So I really appreciate being here for that. Thank you, Chris.
And my disgusting, perverted listeners are all actually hoping that they're fantasizing in their heads that that's actually what's going on while we're doing this anyway. So it works out good if you're actually doing it.
Yeah.
I got invited to, they had me do Yahoo Finance probably like 6 months ago about Tesla. One of the quarterly delivery numbers had come out. So you can find it. It's somewhere on the web, right? So I did a live Skype with them where they asked me one question and I talked for like 3 minutes till you can hear a guy in the background visibly making snoring or audibly making snoring noises, right? Because I was fucking talking too much. And they never invited me back. So I called them out on Twitter or something, and then they sent me an apology, you know? It's very unprofessional. I was like, fuck you guys, man. I'm doing my own fucking podcast. I bet you more people listen. I'm not trying to flex or anything, but I bet you more people listen to this podcast than fucking listen to Yahoo streaming, whatever it was, anyways.
Well, they're great. They're nice. There's like three of them in the studio this afternoon, and they're good.
You're just saying that because they just had you on, and because you want to keep going on.
No, they're genuinely nice. Seriously, they let me talk as much as I want within the segment, and they're great. The people who won't have me on anymore because I've badmouthed them so much on Twitter is CNBC. Kelly Evans, who was terrific, had me on her show three times talking about Tesla, and she's really great. She's sharp. She's incredibly nice. But I think my guess is someone over her head just put me on the no-fly list, so to speak, because, you know, you and I both have said so many things about bubble vision and stupidity on that channel, and, you know, so we're not on there anymore. I said yesterday I could fix CNBC seriously in 6 months just by filling it with sort of critical thinkers. I would have every shift hosted by like a Mark Haynes, you know, bless his soul, if you remember him. And it would completely turn the channel around and people would watch it again.
You don't even need to make the whole station critical thinkers. You just have to have, like you're saying, like one on the desk every hour, right? Like, would it be so fucking difficult? You know what I mean? But like, look, to be honest with you, I hope they keep fucking up because this is the no-fly zone that you're in right now. And I like having you here. And that's the cool thing about doing the podcast is no matter who tells you no, who tells me no, whatever, you're always going to have a spot to come back on here. And I'll always have a spot to bitch and rant. And that was the whole point. And I think networks like CNBC and other news networks that have been fucking up over the last, you know, couple of years, especially when it comes to politics, those people are going to find out in a very difficult way that content creators now have a voice and they can go out and say whatever they want on the web. And the contributors don't need to come to them anymore. You know, so people that may have coveted you as a show host or as a participant on one of the shows years ago, you know, you can do your own thing, Mark. You don't need one of the news networks to come to you because you have just as big of a megaphone, if not on a podcast like mine, but also you could go and start your own shit if you wanted to.
Yeah. I mean, I love the show you did last week, and I saw he's coming back again with David Collum. I'd seen him on Twitter. I'd never heard him. He's fantastic.
He really is.
It turns out he was a professor. He had just started at Cornell back when I was there in the early 80s, and I just never took his class. But that's because I was, you know, let's face it, way too fucking stupid to take an organic chemistry class. But if I were smarter, I definitely would have taken his class because he would have been great, you know.
Yeah, I really enjoyed having him on, and he's going to be a regular. I'm going to have him back on next week. And as a matter of fact, for those of you that are my patrons, you can go on to my Patreon, and actually there's a spot where you can submit questions for that interview if you have them. If you're not a patron and you have a question, well, you know, you can go throw rocks because I'm almost... This is how capitalism works, all right? If you're contributing to the podcast, then you get a chance to ask a question. Otherwise, you can go fly a kite. Anyways, look, let's go back to CNBC real quick, because one of the things I want to bring up right off the bat is Phil LeBeau, okay? Phil LeBeau has been defending this company, and even last week, one of the things that's happened since the last time you've been on was this video breaks of this Model S, it looks like, in a parking garage somewhere in China, and it looks like security video, and the thing is just sitting there parked in the middle of a couple of Audis, and all of a sudden you see smoke starting to emanate from underneath the car, and then within a couple of seconds the entire car is engulfed in flames, and the guy who put the video up had also put up a photograph of the charred wreckage after it happened. It's clearly pretty obvious at first glance that it looked legitimate. It was going around on Chinese social media before it hit the American media. Now there is a state-owned Chinese media source that says it may have been a short in the battery that caused it, which indirectly, if you ask me, confirms that it's real. And when this video goes up, all you get from CNBC a couple of days ago are people saying, is this real? I don't think this is real. How could this have been faked?
Don't forget Mr. or Mrs. Ben Callow. Melissa, what's her name?
Melissa Lee,
who, by the way, who I think is probably the dumbest chick who ever got into Harvard, I have to say. And in fact, clearly she got in before they discriminated against Asians, because she would have been the absolute bottom of the barrel. Probably the dumbest Asian chick who ever got into Harvard, for sure.
That is a horrible, horrible thing to say.
I just
want to go on the record and say I don't endorse that statement. But go ahead.
Just to be clear, that discrimination is horrendous. And I hope, the Asian community is fighting. I hope they win. I mean, I think it should be on meritocracy and not, Asian people do too much homework and so we shouldn't let too many of them in. But I'm just saying, if there is a quota, which there is now, which Harvard admitted, today she would never make that quota. They would take some other race of, they would take even a fake Indian like Elizabeth Warren over her, I think, at this point. So anyway, so getting back on topic.
Oh, my God.
Of course, she's married to Ben Callow, who, by the way, was a vice president at Allen Stanford Financial. I think the second biggest fraud in history after Bernie Madoff. And by the way, not that he was in any way connected with the fraud, except he worked there and he was too dumb to know it was a fraud. And he's still pumping Tesla even to this day. He's got a $400 target, and he put out some nonsense today about how it's great. And of course, speaking of, me picking my nose here, he comes out with Tesla as a quote unquote fresh pick, right? Like every 3 weeks, it's a fresh pick. But anyway, they're married, so she's a big apologist / booster for Tesla, and she was there going, "Oh, isn't it convenient that the camera is centered right there?" Well, lady, it's a fucking parking garage filled with $100,000 cars. And guess what? There's like a camera every 20 feet. And in fact, later they released a video of the same explosion, from the next camera over, like a different angle, And I don't know what you said about that. I just happened to hear the other segment. So, yeah, I mean, to your point, and LeBeau, that fat, lazy fuck. I mean, he's the most incredible apologist for Tesla. I mean, and I remember when they came out with the Model X, he did these like this all day long infomercial with live shots driving in the Model X. I don't know what the hell is going on there. I mean, I don't think Phil is nefarious. I think Phil is dumb, but I think CNBC has such a retail investor base that's in love with Tesla that they think it's good for ratings to do this shit. But really, they would have so much better credibility if they asked, serious critical questions. I mean, even Sorkin in the morning is like this total Musk fanboy. He's kind of a disgrace on this thing also. So, by the way, we're just ensuring that neither one of us, we just got another 5 years tacked onto our CNBC ban right here.
Well, I think that ship sailed for me a long time ago, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
You know what it sailed for me was when I was following Herbalife very closely. And there were changes that were happening to one of their 10Qs, and I was writing about the verbiage changes. And Scott Wapner, I think maybe I had emailed Scott Wapner, or Scott Wapner had emailed me, what does this mean? He was asking me, and I was like, yeah, why don't you come on? I said, why don't you let me come on the air, and I'll explain it to you. I had points that I wanted to make in response to Tim Ramey, who was on the air defending Herbalife at the time, like all the time. They always had Tim Ramey on Halftime Report. So I said, why don't you let me come on and I'll make my points and Tim Ramey can make his points. And they never had me on the air, but they were happy to take my advice. He was happy to take my advice via email when he needed it, when he needed an explanation on something. And, you know, I've had other news anchors do the same thing, come to me and be like, hey, what does this mean? I can't figure this out by myself. And then when I say, hey, why don't you let me come on the air? I'll behave myself and I'll just tell you on the air, you know, they're not interested. So that was one of the reasons I was like, fuck this. I'm like, you know, why am I giving these people my analysis? Why am I giving them my thoughts when I could be just doing this shit on my own? Like, and when I asked Scott Wapner to come on this podcast after he wrote the book on the Herbalife thing, he rescheduled with me like 3 fucking times until finally I was like, you know what? Like, I just told him, I'm like, forget it. You know, I can't deal with being rescheduled with 3 times, you know, in a row. You obviously don't give a shit. You would have been like, Mark, I schedule you to come on. I say, hey, 4:30 on Thursday. Bang, 4:30 on Thursday, you're there. Not one, not two, 3 times this guy. Well, I can't do it. I need to talk to my publicist. I'm like, your publicist? I'm like,
publicist? He's a fucking anchor on CNBC. There's probably more people. You probably get a bigger audience by rolling down the window with a megaphone on Second Avenue than he's got. More people in the studio than watching it anyway.
You know, I was just the first time I met him at Sohn like 4 years ago. I saw him and I went to go introduce myself to him and I was like, "Hey, Scott, how are you?" And he was just like, "Thanks for watching," and just walked past me. And I was
giant ego. No, that's it. I've met a number of CNBC people who are actually incredibly nice people. Kelly Evans, super nice. Bill Griffith, if he's still on there, you know.
Tyler Madison,
super nice guy. Tyler seems like I did meet him briefly. Very nice guy. I mean, most of the people on there are really nice people, and you know, to some extent, they're probably boxed in by the network not allowing them to ask, you know, critical questions. And then, but then, just some of them are probably just nice personal people on air and aren't constituted to ask, you know, critical questions. So look, the ratings on Scott Wapner's, you know, Icon Ackman segment were just through the roof. That's the most legendary segment ever on CNBC. And I met somebody connected with that show once afterwards, and he told me they spent, you know, the next 5 years trying to recapture that and were never able to do it. And they could do it if they allowed critical thinking and questioning from the anchors of the guests.
Right.
You know, but for whatever reason, you know, they don't do it. By the way, Herbalife is interesting. So just really as a very brief detour, I'll tell you why I never shorted Herbalife. It's like one short I was not stupid enough to do, which is when Ackman shorted it, it was incredibly cheap on a cash flow basis and earnings basis and everything else. And I looked at that and I said, okay, you know, let's say the government comes in and regulates it and slashes everything in half. Well, in that case, it goes from incredibly cheap to maybe slightly expensive. I mean, that thing had to be zeroed out with no viable business to make sense. And I just didn't think it would happen. I thought they would get regulated and earnings would go down to fair value-ish. That's why I never touched that for whatever that's worth, you know.
Yeah, and I think that I think going forward with Herbalife, and obviously that was a huge miss on my part because I was shorted for a while and it never panned out, but for some, you know, drops here and there. And I certainly do still believe that the entire company is an illegitimate business model. And of course, I'm going to believe that about many multi-level marketing companies. I mean, it just takes a modicum of common sense to understand that these companies are, most of them are pyramid schemes just by the way that they function. But with that trade, you know, that was one that just, it didn't pan out for me, and I spent a lot of time on it. It was fairly disappointing, but I think going forward, I still think, Mark, we're going to find out some things maybe under the surface there that we don't know about yet. That's just a guess, just my guess.
Is anyone pursuing that anymore? I mean, what's going on? I don't even look at that company. I thought someone was taking it private or something.
I don't know if anybody is pursuing it. But what I would say is that it wouldn't surprise me if we learned more about the bowels of that company one way or the other. There's a pending lawsuit. There's a lawsuit that's being litigated right now, the lead counsel of which against the company is a, you know, vociferous critic of the company who knows very well how the company works and how its business model works. I think that they're getting close to discovery, so it should be interesting to see if anything pops out on that. But anyways, I look, it just to put a bookend on the Herbalife thing, I wouldn't be surprised if more stuff came out in the future, but, you know, who the fuck knows? Maybe it's a fraud that'll go on for another 100 years.
Yeah. Okay. All right.
You
got to
think about where the billions of dollars in revenue are going, right? Where's this product that nobody can turn around and put their finger on? You know, billions of dollars of it. What's going on? I mean, what's going on? Anyways, let's turn our attention to one Tesla and yesterday's report. And of course, I wanted to get your take on yesterday's earnings report. So come on with it.
Well, I mean, as we both know, and as in fact, most of the market knows, that report was an absolute disaster, you know, both from a top line standpoint and a bottom line standpoint, right? I mean, top line, sequentially, revenue was down, what, 37 or 38%. Bottom line, they had a GAAP loss of over $700 million. And, you know, of that $700, I think, you know, maybe $180 of it were sort of one-time stuff, right? Like 60-something in restructuring, if I remember right, and 120-something in the RVG valuation. And maybe there was another 60 in inventory write-down. But here's the thing. You know, they said they did that because of the price cuts, right? I mean, they've had such a demand problem, they slashed prices multiple times already this year, but they slashed prices again in April, you know, which is Q2. So is there going to be another inventory write-down for that? I don't know.
The oddest thing about that $700 million loss that they posted for the quarter was like 2 months ago when they were telling journalists at this secret conference call or whatever they had, they're like, hey, hey, you know, we might swing to a slight loss in Q1. And then they come out and print, you know, $750 million loss. And it's just like, how does anybody fucking trust this company?
Well, right. So now they're guiding to 90 to 100,000 deliveries in the current quarter, which would be up approximately 50%, right, from Q1. And yet all the guys I know, which is this widely dispersed, you know, let's call it the TSLAQ crowd, which are monitoring the delivery centers in all the different places, plus any of us online can monitor what's going on a daily basis in deliveries on Norway, which is their largest European market. I mean, it's looking exactly like last quarter, you know, maybe worse. So I mean, I think that you know, they'll be lucky to sell as many cars this quarter as last quarter. Maybe my guess is they probably sell, you know, maybe 10% fewer, and the ASPs are going to be a lot worse because of all the price cuts and everything else. So it's going to be a disaster. And what's shocking to me is they have a pretty decent idea of how this quarter is going to shape up already,
right?
Because they're a third of the way into it, and they gave the most fraudulent guidance I've ever seen, you know, from any large cap, widely followed company, you know, that sells like widgets, to be a third into the quarter and do that. Any other normal company would be backing off on that.
But
right?
But I mean, theoretically, the guidance could be accurate, right?
Well, there's no way it's accurate based on any research that we've done. There's no backlog anymore. There's nothing like that. You know, sales are crappy at the delivery centers. The only way it could theoretically be possible is, you know, if Musk has a 30,000 unit fleet order, you know, which is ridiculous, in his back pocket. Other than that, you know, he's doing, you know, you've probably seen it. People have put clips online of him talking about the Solyndra people and basically saying that you got to bluff and pretend things are great until the very end. And you know, that's exactly what he's doing here. And, you know, he's probably going to try to raise capital on the back of that forecast, you know, and I'm not so sure an investment bank is going to be willing to, a legitimate one anyway, you know, is going to be willing to underwrite that, because there's a real responsibility and a liability. And okay, Elon, you know, you've lied so much about guidance before. Let's see the proof that you're going to deliver 90 to 100,000 cars. And that proof isn't there. And by the way, the other funny thing about that is, they simultaneously said they're going to deliver 90 to 100,000 cars, and they're still going to have a loss that's just not as bad as the Q1 loss. So you telling me they can't even make money delivering 90 to 100,000 cars? This is not a viable, even without all the fraud, it's just not a viable business. It's ridiculous, you know? And you throw in the fraud and, well, look, we're on the same page, right?
Well, so, to me, it's just
anybody listening to this. I doubt there are any Tesla bulls listening to this.
I bet you they listen to it. I bet you
the only people listening to
Tesla
this is
private
Tesla
investigators.
Right. People on Musk's payroll, right? Who, you know, I don't know if they've come after you, but I'm sure they've tried to come after me. As I said, actually, I said it this morning on Twitter. Fortunately, I'm an incredibly boring fucking guy, and there's just nothing there on me. But, you know, they're going after this guy, Skabushka, you know, of course. And they went after that guy, Eric, who found out that the paint shop capacity was a lot less than Musk was claiming and still is. And so that Musk was therefore lying about that. And somehow they doxed these guys and they go after him. And who knows who else they've gone after who have, you know, disappeared from Twitter or tried to go after. You know, eventually there's going to be a lot of books written about this. And this will be part of one of the books of how, you know, Musk, you know, did whatever he could, you know, to try to intimidate his let's not say critics, try to intimidate people telling the truth about the company.
I wonder if they'll do the what the Herbalife did with Barry Minkow back in the day. They just paid him off, you know. They're just like, here's 300 grand. Shut the fuck up about the company, you know. Like, go take a walk, you know. I don't.
Herbalife did. You mean that you're talking about the Z-Best guy after he came out of jail and was allegedly
he was a fraud buster. Yeah. They paid him. They paid him like $300,000. But he started talking about the lead content in the products, and I guess that touched a nerve with them. And
but didn't he go back to jail? I mean,
I think he did. I don't know for what.
He did some other fraud, or he tried to blackmail somebody. By the way, it's very funny that you bring that up, because I was at dinner with some guys the other night, and one of them was telling me that he was short this. Apparently Canadian, I don't know anything about it, Canadian mattress company, and the ticker is ZZZ. And obviously, it's for obvious reasons, you know, get your Z's mattress company. But really, I mean, that was the ticker for one of the most famous frauds of what, like the 1980s or whatever. I mean, why would somebody take that ticker, you know? Of course, if anybody out there is too young and doesn't remember it, it's a company called ZBest, and their ticker, I think, was ZZZ, right? And they pretended to be cleaning up offices for insurance companies, you know, when there was like a flood or whatever, and it turned out to be a total fraud, and the guy went to jail for it. So,
there's your fun fact for the day, ladies and gentlemen.
A little Wall Street history.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So let me ask you a question. I mean, I got a million things I want to ask you about. Firstly, I guess let's talk. Let me just reiterate again for the record. The fact that this guy said 8 weeks ago that they may swing to a slight loss in this quarter and then they post that number. I mean, if you want a recent tangible example that you can sink your teeth into and that you can hang off of how this company postures up and what they actually deliver, that's a perfect example. You know, I think it was late February they said on that call, deliveries are a little fucked, so maybe you'll see a slight loss in Q1, and then it's bang, you know, $700 million loss for the quarter. I mean, it's just, and this is, by the way, if you go back 6 months, you turn the dial back 6 months, Mark, is when he's saying, I believe he said he expected them to be profitable every quarter this year, right?
Correct. Yeah, he said this year, right, they would be profitable every quarter going forward. Yeah. You know what's got to be killing him? It's a little bit of a detour, but it's still somehow it's reminding me of it because of his various statements, you know, like those. You know, I mean, this guy it's got to be driving him crazy that he has totally lost his Twitter juice, right? I mean, he did the Model Y pump, like nothing happened. He did the autonomy pump, nothing happened. I think there was another pump. He goes on there all the time now and like, the stock just doesn't react anymore. It's got to be driving him insane, right? That you know, he's become a laughing stock now. At this point, I don't think it matters what the SEC. The SEC could say, Elon, you know, we'll back off. You just tweet whatever the fuck you want. It doesn't matter because nobody believes him anymore. His credibility is shot.
It certainly does feel like that. I mean, especially with the stock dropping under 250 today. I put out a tweet today just saying, like, what's going to happen when this guy loses the retail sycophants that have been propping this stock up. Forget about Ron Barron. Forget about these other, you know, big institutional longs, right? But like, what's going to happen when he loses the 100,000 people that have this in their Robinhood account, you know, and the true believers, and they start to turn on him? I saw Bagholder Quotes today put up a quote from somebody that was still bitching about Sun Edison. You know, that equity was canceled. That equity was canceled like 2 fucking years ago, Mark. Like, can you imagine what the blowback's going to be when this thing starts to move lower?
Yeah, the only thing that's crazy is there has to be somebody other than Robinhood people buying or at least trading this thing, right? I mean, this stock traded 21 million shares today, almost 22 million. And, you know, if there's 100,000 Robinhood people and the average one has 20 shares in his account, you know, that's not enough to, I mean, look, any normal company. So Tesla was down $11 on this today, right? Any normal company would have been down at least 20%, right? Which would have been $50 or whatever today, right? So somebody somehow is buying, you know, or supporting this thing, and nobody I know has any idea who it is. And I talk to a lot of people, and people ask me, and, you know, people who are smart guys who you've heard of, and people are like, who the fuck is buying this thing? And I don't know the answer. I mean, we joke about, you know, Musk's foundation in Curacao, you know, which is authorized to trade puts and calls, and we found that paperwork and posted that. Somebody sent that to me, and I posted it, you know, a while ago, and everybody knows about it. I don't know. I mean, that sounds like tinfoil hat-ish, but I mean, who the hell is buying? I don't know. Why wasn't the stock down $30 or $40 today? I don't have an answer. But look, we know where it's going. It's just people who are calling me up or emailing me, hey, congratulations. Yeah. So I and anyone else short this, of course, a lot more people than me, we're right about the demand issue and the earnings issue, and fundamentally we're right. But the stock is still, you know, $247, and it's got a long way to go. And as I was joking with somebody a few minutes ago, we haven't yet reached the, you know, Warren Buffett is going to save the company stage.
Right. You know, that will happen, by the way.
Right. Of course, that'll happen. And then we'll get like the $20 pops on that shit. So, you know, it's a long way to go here. But that said, you know, I came into this with a very big position into the earnings report. I don't plan to cover any of it until this thing, you know, zeroes out or gets taken out at some low two-digit number if someone's stupid enough to do it. But I'm also not going to add to it at this point. You know, I'll make a lot of money, as will my partners, from here if this thing just keeps going down. And I'll be a lot more relaxed about it than worrying about, you know, shorting more of it in the hole and then more of it and then worrying if it bounces $10. I don't give a fuck. You can bounce $10, $20, $30 on me. You know, we're fine and we're going to make money on this and we're not going anywhere, you know?
It certainly feels like no matter how they save, if they save the company, right? If somebody, if there's a white knight that steps in and offers to save the company, regardless of what happens, it seems like all roads point to the equity going lower. Because obviously, one, you have a company that may not be solvent, right? So on its own, probably the equity belongs lower. But secondarily, like say Buffett were to come in, right? And say he were to make a, you know, a major investment in the company, it would probably be dilutive to the equity. I mean, the equity may pop on it, but ultimately might wind up being dilutive to the equity. It would be interesting to see at what price that would happen and what the pop in the stock would be as a result of the headline versus how dilutive it would be to the equity.
Well, I mean, look, I mean, what are you buying here at this point? You know, first of all, this isn't a growth. This isn't like, oh, yeah, they're losing money, but they're growing. No, this company is in like drastic decline. Right. That's number one. Number two, it's got drastic liabilities out there. I mean, you know, in terms of financial liabilities, like the battery purchase thing and of course, the debt. But beyond that, huge warranty liabilities. You know, you started to, and we got sidetracked, but talking about that fire in China. And then, like, I think within a day, there was another spontaneous fire in the Netherlands, which we posted, right? And, you know, any other company, you know, it's amazing. All these idiot Tesla lemmings were like, oh, you know, ice cars catch fire, blah, blah, blah. You know, BMW had a whole recall for their fires. Guess what, dude? The key word there is recall, okay? When an ice company finds out its cars are catching fire. A couple of years ago, the last generation Porsche GT3, you know, they found out there was something in the engine which was causing them to catch fire. They recalled all the GT3s and gave them all brand new engines. Now, obviously, you know, that's Porsche and it was a limited number of cars. I don't know how many they made, a couple of thousand. But still, BMW is recalling the cars and fixing what has to be fixed. Musk cannot afford to recall the cars. I mean, what if there are shorts in these battery packs? Just theorizing. I mean, a battery pack costs Tesla ballpark like $18,000. The company would be instantly bankrupted. So, okay, ICE cars do have fires, but when you know about them, you do the recall. Tesla is not being responsible. They're not recalling these cars, and maybe they should be recalling these cars. Same thing, of course, on the whole, you know, wampy wheel suspension thing. There's all kinds of data out there that these wheels fall off, at least before they change the suspension from, you know, cast to forge or whatever the hell they did. I'm not an engineer. And yet they've never recalled that because it would be very expensive and, you know, they don't want to spend the money. So, you know, we got sidetracked. How did we get on that?
Well, I mean, my question is, how many videos do we need to see, like the one from China, right?
Right.
How many of those do we need to see for a regulator to do something? Like, what's it going to take?
It wasn't just that.
I mean,
how about last?
And honestly, Mark, what, like, honestly, when's it going to happen when there's somebody in the car? And when's that going to be on video? Because that video is going to be horrifying.
It does happen. Those two teenage kids in Florida who, you know, they were speeding. I mean, at the time of impact, you know, they said, oh, they had hit 100 or whatever. Well, at the time of impact, if I remember right, it was 80 miles an hour, which was still crazy, right? It was a 45 zone or whatever the hell it was. But apparently they burned to death in the car because they couldn't get out because the door handles didn't work.
But they were speeding. I'm talking about somebody just sitting in a parking lot, you know, at the grocery store waiting, you know, the dog or the baby and the father are in the car while the mother's in there at the grocery store, and all of a sudden the fucking thing just goes up in flames.
Right. Remember last summer that Hollywood actress, her husband was driving the car and it just ignited into flames sitting at a traffic light, the Tesla, and it was all over the internet, and she said, you know, she would never talk again. So yeah, this shit happens, and okay, I agree. Yes, sometimes it happens on ice cars, but when it happens, if they find out about it, they recall it voluntarily normally, and Musk isn't because he can't afford it, and maybe it's the image and whatever else. And
well, he can't. I mean, one recall and it's over. One recall for that and it's over, right?
So that's right. So now I know how we got on this topic because we talked about, well, you know, would some strategic or financial investor put real money into this company? And the answer is with those liabilities, they wouldn't. And that's before you do, you know, what I call, what anyone would call, you know, a build versus buy analysis, which obviously Apple did and all these other guys doing, where, okay, we can develop our own electric car with none of Tesla's liabilities and, you know, do the whole thing for $3 billion. Why should we put money into this company at a $50 or $60 or $70 billion enterprise value? It would be absurd, you know? And Musk himself is destroying the brand through his, you know, erratic behavior. And what are you buying here? Everybody competent has fucking left the company, right?
I mean, except for Straubel. I think he's going to go this year would be my guess.
Well, that's the rumor, right? I don't know anything about this, but the rumor is floating around that Straubel's, you know, got one and three quarter feet out the door, right? And by the way, do you need Straubel at this point? I mean, you know, and so the other part of this equation is, you know, these guys can now go and drive an I-Pace, which is a fantastic electric car, where they can drive the e-tron, and pretty soon they'll be able to drive the Porsche Taycan or the Mercedes EQC, and Mercedes is coming out with electric model across the line. And it's not that any of these guys are going to invest, you know, in Jaguar and Porsche and Mercedes, but they're all going to say, wait a second, what are we investing in here when all those OEMs can do the same thing and have a much nicer interior and it's much more reliable and much less likely, I believe, to catch fire because they're using a different format for the battery. They're using, you know, these larger format prismatic cells or pouch cells rather than the way Tesla packs in all these little cylindrical cells. So, and in fact, I do know one specific way that the Audi battery is cooled differently from the Tesla battery, which makes it a lot less likely to, you know, to ignite like that. So why would you buy Tesla at this point? You know, the growth is gone. The liabilities are growing, to use Musk's word, exponentially. So, I mean, you know, why would you do it? My two favorite things that Musk does is he uses the word exponentially in completely meaningless context. And the other thing he says is, like, he said it yesterday, like, Tesla cars are 500% less likely to catch fire, whatever. How could something be 500% less of anything? You know, if it goes to zero, it's 100%, right?
Right.
This guy's supposed to be some kind of fucking engineer. He's just a total four-flushing phony, you know? But to the credit of the American public and the world public, because I know you have listeners all over the world, right? People are finally catching on to his bullshit. You know, even Fred from Electric, who I don't feel sorry for, because as far as I'm concerned, Fred steals other people's stories without crediting them. and you know, he owned the stock, and Fred was a complete disingenuous, you know, crook who would bury the bad stories. Even he recently is kind of catching on and talking about some of the critical stuff. And of course, Musk on Twitter the other day, you know, disowned him.
Right,
he's like,
I saw
what happened
that.
To you, Fred? You know, like, what was it like from The Godfather? You broke my heart, Fredo.
Freedom, know? Yeah.
In this case, it's Fredo. So, you know, so, yeah, but, you know, that's Musk. Musk is a thin-skinned,
It certainly appears that way.
Guy.
I mean, they had it out on Twitter, the two of them, the other day I saw. And that's certainly what it looks like, you know. But, you know, that guy, Fred Lambert, I mean, he made, I guess, a significant amount of money in the form of Tesla vehicles off of those referrals that were going through his website. Remember, Ed Niedermeyer.
But he never got them. I don't know the details, but supposedly he earned himself two Roadsters. That's two cars that will never be built. You know? So, you know, and this is a guy who's fucking Model 3. The door handles froze and he could get into his car one day in Canada. But of course, as we well know, we've talked about this before, as everyone has, you know, they test this car basically on Wilshire Boulevard in Beverly Hills when it's 70 degrees and sunny, and it was never tested anywhere else. So, you know, yeah.
Yeah. It's interesting when you start to lose kind of those types of supporters. It's an interesting environment. But again, there was no, I didn't feel like yesterday there was any like aha moment. And I think it looks like it's going to continue to be a slow bleed. I mean, I'm wondering if the 250 level that we lost today is permanently going to be lost.
Well, you know, with the stock at 247, it's hard to say that 250 is permanently.
Mark,
lost.
I agree, Mark.
I'll say
at the risk of sounding like
permanently.
At the risk of sounding like a bag holder, I will say it feels like, I don't know, man. It feels like there's a bid under the stock that is just unnatural. I mean, you see a report like yesterday, and a huge miss like yesterday. And I feel like any other stock, right? I mean, look at 3M today, right? They come out and they miss or whatever they did. You know, they're off 8%, off 10% today. You know, they have their worst day in 100 years because the numbers weren't there. And then it just, this company just seems like it's fucking bulletproof sometimes. And even though it fell today, you know, if you had given me those numbers beforehand yesterday and said, objectively, what do you think the stock's going to do? I'd say, well, this should be trading in the 220s. On this, so, you know, this is going to be at least a 10% because they had already lowered expectations across the board for the quarter. So to come in and miss those expectations so violently, but you know, whatever.
We talked about that a few minutes ago when I said, yeah, it should have been 20%. I mean, any other stock would have dropped, you know, 20%, $50 or roughly in the case of Tesla, and that's what we talked about. I don't know who's buying this, but who's ever buying it is not some. You know, it's not going to take over the freaking company. You know, they're not accumulating a position to take it over. It's kind of interesting to figure out, you know, what's going to happen with Larry Ellison. I mean, you know, my gut feel about Ellison, first of all, Ellison is obviously a brilliant businessman and a shark. I mean, from nowhere, from a middle-class upbringing, he's one of the richest guys in the world and built a massively successful, you know, business, a real business, you know, unlike Tesla. So he's a brilliant business guy. So, but, you know, the only way a brilliant business guy would have done what he did, which was basically take a flyer with approximately, 1.5% of his money and buy Tesla stock, is, you know, I think he had kind of a guy crush on Musk. I mean, and, you know, he would have sort of admit it without using those words. He said, oh, Musk lands rockets on barges. Who are you to say he can't make this successful? But now that he's in there and he sees what the fuck is going on, what's he going to do? I mean, I don't think he's going to throw, you know, good money after bad on this thing. The question is he going to get the hell out of there to save his reputation, or is he just going to write this thing off and, well, I did it, and, you know, that's it? I mean, he's not on any board committees. If you go to Tesla's, you know, governance website, and, you know, now they still have all the members on there, even though they're cutting the board first to 9 and then to 7. And, you know, everybody's on a committee except Kimball and Larry. So, you know, I was joking with this the other day, or talking with somebody. You know, Musk probably asked Ellison to do this because at that point he needed to impress the market. And Ellison probably said, you know, I'll do it as a favor to you, but I'm not spending any time on this. I don't have the time. And so the question is, what is he going to do next? I don't know.
That's not just him. I mean, it's, you know, again, like I just said, J.B. Straubel, like, Is he going to go at some point? I mean, you got to think these people are starting to think Ahuja had the right timing, right? The CFO, Ahuja had the right timing because he knew that this Q1 was going to be a fucking disaster. So the fact that he got out of the door and left this kid Kirkhorn in here now, you know, shows that shows that CFOs don't just leave when things are about to get excellent and their equity awards are about to, you know, vest in brilliant fashion, right? It means that generally when an executive like that leaves, there's a reason for it. I want to ask you real quick, is he supposed to appear before Judge Nathan this week, or not appear before her, but aren't they supposed to have hammered out a resolution by today or tomorrow with Judge Nathan,
today.
Or is that next week?
Right. No, it's tonight would be the deadline. You know, look, they could file another extension. They could file and say, well, we're still talking, still trying to work it out. So far, as of now, you know, as you and I are talking, it's 5:13 on the East Coast, and there's nothing filed yet, but, you know, I've seen stuff filed on this thing, you know, late at night. So who knows?
Interesting. Yeah, I thought it was interesting that after 2 weeks, they said that when they filed for the extension, that they only had spoken for an hour. I said, well, we talked for an hour. I was like, wow, all right. You know, given that they had 2 weeks.
And by the way, Musk went on an insane tweet storm the weekend after that, I believe, if I remember that, right? That was last week. But he's been doing this all the time. I mean, so here's the thing. The other night, so – This was okay. Now I remember his rocket blew up like on Saturday, right? And then he spent all Saturday night tweeting nonsense in Russian and Japanese anime characters, whatever the fuck he was doing. And then he's coming into earnings this week. And what did he do? He spent half the night on, when was it? Tuesday night tweeting about making a leaf blower. I mean, you know, this guy, look. You know, we're not dealing with somebody who's mentally all there. You know, Musk himself admitted on Twitter once, that he was bipolar, right? You combine bipolar, you know, with the drug use, and this guy's just not all there, you know? I mean, and, you know, it's funny, like the SEC, like, he flies out to in a nice suit to show his face in front of the judge like he's being conciliatory, right? And then a few days later, he's going nuts, spewing nonsense on Twitter. It's almost like hour to hour, depending on where the bipolarity is or, you know, what
depending
drug
on where the
he's
stock
taking.
Is.
Well, the stock is part of it also. But even aside from the stock, I mean, just mentally, I think he just changes back and forth. I think he's kind of crazy, you know?
Yeah, there's
in addition to all his honesty issues, you know, I think he's crazy. It's not like he's a sane crook, you know?
There's a Business Insider article that just crossed the wire just like moments ago while we're doing the podcast, and it quotes Mary Cummings, who's a professor at Duke who researches autonomous vehicle technology, and her quote about Musk's robo-taxis.
Oh, publicity stunt.
Yeah, she said, this is a publicity stunt to take away attention from the quarterly earnings. So,
well, that's exactly what I said, by the way. It's obvious, so nobody's copying me, but that's exactly what I said yesterday on the Cheddar TV interview. This is like, you know, this is the bright, shiny object that Musk – by the way, yeah. So Musk has this habit of when bad news is coming, he pulls a publicity stunt. He dangles a bright, shiny object in front of the minions – In order to essentially inoculate the stock. And his plan is always, okay, I'll put $20 on the stock with this bright, shiny object. And then when the bad news comes out, it'll drop $15 and
right.
I'll still be ahead of the game, right? But the problem is, in this case, none of the bright, shiny objects work. The Model Y, you know, the autonomy day, you know, whatever other nonsense he pulled, you know, the stock is just did nothing on those days. And it's just in this downtrend. If you look at a chart, since like mid-December, the stock is in a definite channel of a downtrend with lower highs, you know, and lower lows. And actually, let me take a look here. You know, okay, so right now, I'm looking at a weekly chart. Right now, it's sort of at the bottom of that channel, and it'll be interesting to see if it breaks down below that channel or if it kind of holds here and bounces, you know, to the top of the channel, which – you know, might be somewhere, you know, in like the low 260s or something like that, you know?
Well, let's just look at, you bring up the Model Y event. Let's just look at the last couple of things that he's done publicly, right? Let's go back to the Boring Company tunnel reveal, which I know we've talked about before, so I don't want to harp on it too much, but I mean, that was obviously a farce, right? When he put that woman in there and yeah. they're driving ping-ponging down this track in this tunnel at 42 miles an hour, you know, when he presented yeah. it as this futuristic, oh, people be doing 100 going, you know, back and forth from the airport to their house, blah, 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 whatever. That was obviously a joke. People in the mainstream media picked it up. Then you have the Model Y reveal where they roll out a fucking, basically a Model 3 right next to another Model 3. People are going, hey, is that the same exact car? You know what I mean? And now you have this autonomous driving event where experts are saying, well, you know, first things first, NVIDIA comes out and it rebuts what they say almost immediately. They're at odds with their supplier in Panasonic right now. I mean, it's just, I don't know how anybody objectively looks at what's been going on and has said, oh, this seems like a good environment to go in and get long the stock or to buy. It seems like a good opportunity because these last few events, Mark, to me have just, I mean, everything from the beginning to you has seemed obviously like, but I mean, now it doesn't even seem like they're faking it well, you know, like it doesn't even, when the Model Y came out on stage, I was like, that is the same car. It's this that looks like the Model 3. They making yeah. a whole big event and a big to-do, and ostensibly, I guess they're going to be collecting deposits on this car that they're already producing. And then well, you see something like this autonomous driving event, you're like, what is the real reason for this, right? If the proof isn't in the details that they gave.
Nah, it's obvious what the real reason is. I mean, with the Model Y thing, I think we talked about it last time. I mean, the chief engineer quit, like, within a day or two after Musk announced the unveiling, which was on a very short time frame, like 10, 12 days later or whatever. I don't remember exactly. And clearly he quit because he's like, Elon, this isn't ready. This is bullshit. You're going to tack together some piece of shit. And Elon was like, fuck you. I'm Elon. I'm going to do it. And this guy was like, okay, fuck you. I'm going to go work for a real company, you know? And
so why is Musk allowed to come out and say something like, we're going to have 1 million robo-taxis by 2020?
Well, I guess he's a, well, we all know their answer. The board indulges him and doesn't say anything about it. And of course, you know, the reason for that is because, you know, this board is the highest paid board any of us have ever seen from any company, right? The average comp was like $4 million a year or something, but, you know, in the millions anyway. But the interesting thing about that is, you know, that comp is almost entirely in the form of stock options, you know, which are, you know, modeled on Black-Scholes or whatever to come out with what they're worth. And they actually may wind up worthless. So this board can just, you know, wind up, you know, whoring themselves. Well, they've already whored themselves out, but they could wind up having whored themselves out for free, essentially, you know. And in the meantime, their reputations are shot. They'll never be on a legitimate board.
Well, they're sacrificing their fiduciary duty to shareholders, right?
Of course they are, because they're whoring themselves out for the comp. Look at this fucking moron, Denholm, who is the allegedly the chairman, right, who's apparently still in New Zealand, right? I don't know if she's even gotten here yet to be the chairwoman. But she was in that fucking Bloomberg interview a couple weeks ago saying, oh, I think Elon Musk uses Twitter very properly and effectively. I'm paraphrasing. That wasn't the exact quote, but that's essentially what she said. I mean, what kind of fucking idiot would say that, right? I mean, is she that stupid, or is she just like that much of a total whore? And guess what, whore? Your options are going to be worthless because this thing's going to be zeroed out, and then you'll have no career anymore, you know? So that's what we're dealing with here. Nobody can believe this. So, you know, I mean, why are those four people leaving? Well, board members I'm referencing. You know, three people had a lot of hair on them, right? Brad Buss was the CFO at SolarCity, and SolarCity is involved with, like, a massive fraud lawsuit because, you know, Musk buying it when it was worthless to bail himself out. I should say Tesla buying it, you know, under Musk's direction. So he kind of had hair on him anyway. Steve Jurvetson, or as we call him, Pervertson, was thrown out of his own firm.
You're getting such cheap shots and, like, second-grade insults in here, Mark. I mean, let's try and raise the bar just a little bit, all right?
Did you expect anything? What, raise it to like fourth grade?
Yeah.
Anyway, as I was saying,
I never thought I would say that. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
As I was saying before you interrupted me, Steve Pervertson, you know, was thrown out of his own firm for some sort of sexual harassment thing and still in this board, but, you know, he's phasing himself out,
oh,
right?
Oh, then it makes sense.
That the woman, Barbara something Johnson, You know, the company she inherited from her dad, Johnson Publishing, went bankrupt under her watch. By the way, she's the one who was executing stock options and then dumping the stock at like a profit of like $1 a share or sometimes less than $1 a share. Remember that? Yeah. So, you know, she kind of has to go because, look, you want a board member who's like just, you know, I don't know if she drove her own company to bankruptcy, but her own company went bankrupt under her watch. Do you want them on your board? No. So three of them have hair. Now, the interesting one is Gracias, who was sort of like, you know, Musk's buddy, right? Musk, I think, is invested in his funds. Gracias runs various funds, right? And Gracias invested in every Musk, you know, project, whatever he did. That guy leaving is interesting. I mean, that guy was allegedly an outside director, and of course he wasn't. Now, you know, maybe he's leaving as part of an SEC settlement. I don't know. I mean, he's not like, you know, it's not like he's just walked out the door, you know, that day. I mean, he's staying for at least a year till his term is up. He's staying for at least a year until they can vote to reduce the board size. And if they don't, he's going to stay 2 years until his term is up. So I don't think he's fleeing a sinking ship. I think he's leaving because, you know, maybe there's a deal. But that said, he's also been dumping stock on a 10b5 plan, you know, as if there's no tomorrow. So clearly,
he's been selling a lot of stock.
Even if he stays on the board, he's trying to monetize his stock there as quickly as possible. And of course, that's not a good sign. So the board's going to be down to, once they're gone, it's going to be down to just 7 people. And of course, Musk and his retarded younger brother, Kimball, will now be 2/7 rather than 2/11, which they used to be. So it essentially consolidates his power to some extent, but you know what? He's going to have fucking power over the Titanic. So who gives a fuck, you know?
Well, that could be an argument for short sellers, right? Like, let Musk do whatever he wants. Then, you know, he's exercised such good judgment over the last few years.
I mean, I'm a little mixed about that. So on the one hand, I know he's going to run this company into the ground. I have zero doubt. And as someone who's short the stock, you know, he's like my ace in the hole, the same way the longs think he's their ace in the hole. But on the other side of the coin, you know, if Musk were gone tomorrow and a legitimate, honest CEO came in, he would probably throw the company immediately into bankruptcy, or at the very least, he would say, look, we're abandoning this, we're abandoning that, we're abandoning this, you know, we're scaling everything down, we're a car company, we're just going to focus on this whole thing, and the stock would collapse. So I do think the stock would probably collapse faster if they brought a legitimate guy in and threw Musk out, just because he would be honest about what's going on there. But the other side of the coin, it wouldn't be anywhere near as entertaining. And as long as we know where this is going anyway, it's kind of fun to keep Musk around and watch him just wreck both the company and himself. Well, you know, so.
And yeah. You bring up SolarCity again. I mean, I just think about that, and that's just. That was just the obvious one. When we look back on this, assuming that we're right, and assuming the thing tanks, when you look back on the SolarCity buyout / bailout, that's going to be the point, I think, where people say, how the fuck did we miss it? How did we miss it that that's what was going on here, right? There was no, and how did he get that buyout approved, right? How did he get the board on board for that? I mean, we know how he did. But people are going to be saying, yeah, that should have been the canary in the coal mine, right?
Well, but a lot of people did not miss it, and we've been talking about it for a few years, including, I mean, institutional people. And one of the advisory firms, I think, if not both of them, I don't know which one, said this is bullshit. But, you know, look, I mean, let's face it. This stock has been supported by a small core of really stupid institutional investors. I mean, Bailey Gifford is the dumbest of the dumb. And they have, you know, a double-digit percentage of the company. For a while, T. Rowe did, but they blew it out, you know, over the last few months. And that's probably part of the reason why it's down so much. You know, and then you have, you know, smaller guys like, you know, Ron Barron, who, you know, is just spouts nonsense about this company. But, you know, it's a big position. I think it was roughly, call it a $500 million position or something. But in terms of percentage to company, it's not that much, right? It was a low single-digit percentage. Again, brings us back full circle. I don't know who's buying. I don't know who is taking the position that T. Rowe did have or Fidelity did have. I mean, Fidelity had been slashing like crazy. They were the big holder, too, and they cut it more than in half. So, you know, those are the people who are supporting this nonsense right through the SolarCity thing. Look, here's what they were thinking. They were thinking, yeah, you know, we know Elon's a crook, but he's our crook. You know, yeah, we know a lot of lies and bullshits, but he gets it done eventually. Well, now they're learning that he doesn't get it done eventually. Yeah, I mean, he gets it done. He puts the car out there, but the car has a fucking million problems and loses money and doesn't make money. And they're starting to finally realize that. But that said, I don't know why the stock was only down $11 today and not down $50. I don't have an answer. You know, maybe there's computers in there kicking it back and forth. I don't know. I mean, there are a lot of shorts, but, you know, it's a short interest. I mean, look, something like this, despite the short interest, it should go down. It's an easy borrow now. It's a cheap borrow. So there's no kind of squeeze going on where, oh, you know, there's so many shorts, they all panicked. I don't have an answer. I know where it's going. I don't know why it's taking so long to get there, is what I'm saying.
Maybe, you know? It's the company's pivot into the insurance industry.
Yeah, you know, funny, they asked me about that when I did the Yahoo thing earlier today. That's a dream business for Musk, if you think about it, because he collects the money up front, you know, and then, you know, good luck getting paid on your claim, right? So it's like, that's why I was to do it. But as very smart people pointed out on Twitter last night, good luck getting into that business, which is, with your balance sheet, Tesla, which, you know, that's like one of the most highly regulated businesses that there are. And, you know, there's no way Tesla's going to get fucking authorized by any state agency to sell insurance. I mean, well, the balance sheet is atrocious.
I think the concept, so when I think about whether or not I would buy a Tesla, right? Say you gave me 50 grand to dump on a car tomorrow. What would I buy, right? And to be honest with you, I would consider electric, right? So I would want to go. I would consider it. The one big turnoff that I would have from looking at a Tesla, and I'm not saying that the cars aren't fast, because they are, and I'm not saying that they're not aesthetically pleasing, because they're not terrible looking cars. They're really not, actually. You know,
well, the exterior lines are okay. I mean, the interiors are crap, but on the exterior, okay. But, I mean, where are you going to get it serviced?
Well,
let me finish.
Well, that's my thought. Yeah. Let me finish my thought, damn it. God damn it, Spiegel. You got to stop reading my mind and going where I'm going.
pretty soon
you're
going
to be interviewing me on this podcast. Hey, Chris, nice of you to come back. Happy to be here. This used to be my desk. I don't know what the fuck happened.
I believe you. I don't want your job. You can have it.
All right, fair enough. And not many people do. But anyways, yeah, I mean, the point of what I'm just saying is that they're not terrible looking cars, right? So if I wanted to go out and drop 35 dimes on a car, let's say 40 dimes on a car, right? Like, the one thing that would stop me from going out and getting a Model 3 would be the fact that, A, I can't take it to my mechanic, the guy I normally go to. So I got a good old boy down here that's been doing my, you know, everything I need, all my maintenance that I've known for years, who I trust. And I guarantee you, I parked that thing outside of his shop and he's going to tell me to go fuck myself. That's number one. Because he's not fucking with fucking battery packs and computers. This guy turns wrenches and that's how it works. That's number one. Number two, the idea of that it's possible for me to buy this car, drive off the lot, I guess have it delivered or drive off the lot, whatever.
Yeah.
Get it on the road, right? Wheel flies off, bumper flies off, or engine, you know, something happens, right? The axle seizes up, whatever. And the fact
that you don't have it for 2 months.
Months. I mean, some of the instances that I've been reading online have been a hell of a lot longer than that. I think that's one of the biggest reasons not to own it. And then when you think about the idea that the company with that service record is then going to be in charge of paying out insurance claims, I mean, people can't even get refunds for cars that they've canceled from months ago. I read on forums and online, people that have canceled, you know, meanwhile, other people that are canceling are getting twice, two refunds. People are getting cars delivered without paying for them. And these guys are going to be in charge of taking insurance premiums and then paying out claims. Is that right?
Right. So for a while there was, you know, let's call it an upside risk if you're short the stock, of some deep-pocketed strategic guy saying, well, you know, if we put some money into this thing, we can sort out the service centers. You know, we can up the parts inventory. We can maybe even turn the service centers and the parts inventory into a profit center. And because everyone loves the car, everyone wants the car. Sales are growing like hotcakes, and they're just outgrowing their infrastructure. And that's where we come in and help. Well, guess what? Now sales are plunging, right? So that's like, just no one's going to come in here and say, oh, we can sort out the service and then we'll make a lot of money because they're selling. No, they're not selling hotcakes anymore. Musk is cutting the fucking price every 3 days. He just on the SNX, they just came out again with the lower price version, and they started including, you know, the basic driver assistance package for free, which used to cost $3,000 or whatever. It was confusing. I think that used to be $5,000, and then the fraudulent self-driving was like another $3,000. Well, now then they cut that to $3,000 with fraudulent self-driving for $5,000, and then they just threw it in the $3,000 pack, right? So they're still cutting prices. Even today, the fucking schmuck is on Twitter. Originally, they were going to raise the price of fraudulent self-driving from $5,000 to $6,000, right? They're going to raise it by $1,000. So today, on May 1, and today he goes, we're going to delay that till May 10th in case you don't have a chance to buy a car, you know, between now and then. And guess what? It's like, it's April 25th, you know, and you keep talking about how you can buy a car in 2 minutes on your phone. So then and I said that to him on the Twitter. I don't know if you saw that or just, but anyway, then he comes back and says, well, you know, we're not going to have it turned on for people to buy in the right-hand drive territories on the web until May 1st or 2nd. That's why I'm extending it. Well, guess what? You're already fucking selling cars in those territories already, right? And you claim to be this amazing tech company. You're telling me you can't just make a web page for the Model 3? You know, you need another whatever, 10 days to do that? That's bullshit. He keeps setting up these deadlines and then like, oh, fuck, it didn't work. No one's buying our shit. Oh, I better extend the deadline, but I'll come up with some excuse. Like, remember last month, or I don't know if it was earlier this month. I don't even remember, so much happens with this fucking scam. But remember when they said he had like this deadline for something on pricing or whatever, and then they were like, due to demand on our website, yeah, you know, we're extending that. It 2 more days or whatever. It was total nonsense. These are like the cheapest, shittiest, you know, shit-ass used car lot technique.
That's another one, Mark. Like, how do people not go back and just look at that? That happened just weeks ago, right? And he's like, due to overwhelming demand on the website, you know, we have extended whatever. And then they come out and they post these numbers.
So look, for a long time, you know, this was a religion and there was no critical thinking whatsoever among the congregation. Gradually, you're seeing more and more critical thinking. I mean, you know, you're seeing it. I don't really follow this stuff because I don't have time, but people post it, you know, the comments in the various forums, you know, the Tesla Motor Club forum or the Tesla forum, whatever. And people are increasingly critical, even the tribe, you know, the members of the religion and are starting to mock Musk more and more. And that's, I think, translating into this declining stock price. So point is, people are gradually catching on. I mean, you know, you screw over people enough and even the most devout, you know, congregationists eventually catch on, and that's starting to happen now, you know?
It's just been wild. And well, first off, I think you're right. You know, I think you're right. And I thought a while ago the mainstream media was turning, and I think it has to some degree, but I think it still has the ways to go. But once it becomes sentiment, you know, once
the mainstream media is turning. I mean,
once the gate
reaction
starts to swing in the other direction, yeah, though, Mark, I'm sorry to cut you off. But once the gate starts to swing in the other direction in terms of the public perception of this company going from innocent until proven guilty to guilty until proven innocent, which I think there will be an inflection point there somewhere. Once that happens, then you just set it and forget it. And this one's toast. But I don't think we're there just yet.
Well, you know, that autonomy day was very telling, right? The reaction to that was widely mocked in the media. You know, some people mocked it the way I did and you said somebody did on TV. I actually saw someone else do it on TV also, which was, oh yeah, right. You just talked about that article on Business Insider. Yeah, which is a distraction from the really shitty earnings. Some people said that. Other people just mocked it as just being ridiculously unrealistic, right? And, you know, and by the way, you know, how is the NHTSA tolerating any of this shit? I mean, you go to their
website. I mean, that's a great point. Go ahead.
I mean, what government bureaucrat, you know, does he have pictures of in a compromising position or something? I mean, what the hell is going on there? It's absurd, you know? Look, you and I are both libertarians and, you know, of different, I don't know, you know, I consider myself a moderate libertarian. So a true libertarian would say, hey, we shouldn't even have that agency. Buyer beware, right. You know, let the market sort it out. But, you know, the problem is that when that Tesla's on autopilot out there on the road, you know, you and I don't have a choice. You know, if you're there in your Chevy,
exactly,
and I'm there in some other car and some fucking autopilot rams into me, you know, someone's got to regulate that shit, and nobody's regulating it. I mean, there's this organization, it's an organization called PAVE. I forget what it stands for. It's basically like every major automaker and supplier in autonomy belongs to this thing. And it's basically about a responsible implementation of autonomy. Of course, Tesla's not a member, right? And Pave put out a bunch of stuff, as did Consumer Reports following that. You know, Consumer Reports named Tesla by name. I don't think Pave did, but they basically said what Tesla said there was just reckless and ridiculous. But where's the NHTSA on this, you know?
Yeah, well, I honestly agree. I think that's a great point. And one of the other worrisome things is, you know, my friend Kubiko always posts photos of people on Twitter that are in their cars, or, you know, people take video in their cars, like, hey, look, the autopilot's working, you know, and they've got no hands off the wheel. And he's always tweeting things out like, put your fucking hands on the wheel, dumbass, like my family's out there driving or something. And what people don't realize, no, he's and where the yeah. and I yeah. you know, as a libertarian, look, I would argue the same thing that you just said, right, that we don't need all these government agencies. But since the NHTSA is there, right, and they're supposed to be regulating, what would be better to regulate than essentially, I mean, it's akin to having a bunch of drunk drivers on the road, right? You got a bunch of people that are putting their confidence in the vehicle into the hands of this untested software, where the people are essentially beta testing it. They're calling it autopilot. They're calling it full self-driving, which is leading the customers to believe that the fucking thing can do anything, when in fact, you know, we've seen it cannot, and it's not at the forefront of full self-driving. It's not at the forefront of autonomy. At what point does somebody step in and say, hey, like, we need to get everybody on the same page in terms of this type of regulation, right? Even your Cadillac that's come out with similar technology and other, we have to say, here's what's acceptable, here's what's not acceptable, because it's not just the idiots in the Tesla that'll kill themselves when they put this thing. And I would never, Mark, I would never get into one of these things and put it on autopilot going up a windy road, or even on the highway just going straight. I just don't trust it, given all the things that we've seen. But fine, I kill myself, that's one thing. But the fact that there's other people on the road is, I think, the most cogent point that you're making.
And you know, we talked about this, I think, in an earlier podcast. But, you know, he went on 60 Minutes with no hands and says to the chick, you know, the whoever she was on 60 Minutes, the car's driving itself. And she goes, it's driving itself? And he goes, yeah. And he deliberately has his hands off the wheel, and I don't know what he's doing with it, with his hands, but he wasn't steering the car. And, you know, and yet he says, oh, well, we warn people, you have to pay attention to keep your hands on the wheel. He's a fucking wise guy, Musk. You know, he thinks he's smarter than everybody in the room. He's not. And he's just, he's a wise guy. He always thinks he's putting something over on people.
He
and
said,
by the way, yeah, go ahead.
Oh, I was just saying, he said when he introduced autopilot like years ago, you know, people eventually within a year or two, people will be able to read a book, go to sleep, you know, and it's just like, you think about that message getting to people that don't have the wherewithal or the critical thinking skills to understand. People, the average person, Mark, goes out and buys one of these cars and thinks that it's actually capable of this. They think it's actually capable of, hey, you know, I just set the destination and I put it on autopilot and now I can go take a nap or I can go read a book or whatever. Sorry.
Yeah, people like that are probably too dumb to read books, but they might take a nap. But you know, but to your point, yeah, I mean, it's one thing to protect that idiot, but then it's something else to allow him to unleash his. I mean, what has to happen? Does one of these things have to? Do we have to have the perfect? And I use that word, facetiously, confluence of Tesla events where a Tesla on autopilot rams into a school bus full of kids and bursts into flames. Is that what it's going to fucking take?
Or drives through the lobby of the NHTSA building, you know, at 50 miles an hour.
Right. Yeah, I mean, that would almost be poetic justice at this point, right? I mean, these fucks would be like, oh, maybe there is a problem with this thing. They just blew up our fucking building, and I'm working in a parking lot in Baltimore now, whatever they are. Anyway,
I was just going to say, what do you think about this? We'll talk about Skabushka real quick and what happened there. What do you think happened? I read a conspiracy theory today that, you know, he was, so for those of you that aren't familiar with the story, a Tesla critic on Twitter, at Skabushka, who has been a, you know, very strident critic of the company and lives, I believe, near Fremont, was outed and doxed by the company. The company was granted a temporary restraining order against him for this autonomy day, and there's going to be an evidentiary hearing on it, I believe, May 7th coming up, so they'll both be able to argue as to whether or not. But the company alleges that this guy went and followed one of their autonomous vehicles driving on the highway and then, you know, swerved and got too close to it and put it in a dangerous and precarious situation, whatever, among other things that they claim. My question is, what do you think that car was doing out there with the cameras on it? And how come we didn't see any of that during Autonomy Day? I read a conspiracy theory today saying maybe they were programming the car to go from one destination to another and maybe he had, like, outed it. Do you know anything about that?
So there's a few things here. First of all, we know that everyone who took a ride in those quote unquote autonomous cars, and they were like, you know, 15-minute rides, they all had at least one and sometimes two events where the car would have crashed big time if the guy hadn't intervened. That's number one. Number two, those were pre-planned, pre-programmed routes, you know, in perfect weather. Right, so, which is not
how do you know? How do you know that they were pre-planned and pre-programmed?
Well, a number of people said that, and Tesla didn't deny it. Let me put it that way.
Okay.
Like if they weren't pre-programmed, Tesla would have said, "These are not pre-programmed. You picked the route, and we'll take you." No, they picked the route for a very specific reason. Right. So, what Skabushka was doing, you know, when he actually took pictures of the car, apparently exceeding the speed limit. And like running a stop sign or a traffic light or something like that. And, you know, Tesla might have been trying to put together, like they did 2 years ago, a fake self-driving video. You know, that painted black thing where they made it look like all one thing, but actually they had to splice together a whole lot of runs, you know, to get together one that looked like it was perfect, right? I mean, that's just fraud, basically, because they never admitted that was the case. That was actually uncovered by Ed Niedermeyer, right, on his Daily Kanban blog found that. You can still find that thing. So that's what Skabushka was probably doing here. Now, here's the thing. I spoke to Skabushka about this. I've never met him, by the way. I only followed him on Twitter. And, you know, maybe two or three times we spoke on the phone. And, in fact, I never even knew his real name, you know, for a very long time. And he had once sent me his real name, and I forgot it. And then I was just reminded when this whole thing happened. We spoke about this, and he said, look, he said, I swear – I never touched their car. I never forced them to do anything. And here's the thing. They claim on these cars that they have all these cameras and sensors, and they're storing all the data. And even when they're not on autonomy, they have, what do they call it, shadow mode and all this bullshit. It's like really fucking simple. And I assume this is what he's going to do with his lawyer. He's going to subpoena the footage from the car. And
right.
Then what the fuck is Tesla going to say? Oh, well, we don't really store the footage. Oh, really? So you claim you store all the footage from 500,000 cars out there, but on the car that you were using to prove that you have autonomy, that one you didn't sort of
well. Don't you think that they could have just sought out this TRO just basically to keep him away from the autonomy event, and that's it? I mean, that they're even going into the evidentiary hearing with the expectation to have the TRO revoked.
Correct, but now Skabushka has a bankroll. And, you know, I know you contributed to it. I contributed to it. So it allowed
possibly a cause of action, right?
Well, there's a bankroll here to force them, and I think he'll do it. I hope he'll do it, to publicly apologize for maligning his reputation and admitting that they made the whole fucking thing up. And, oh, you're not going to do that? Okay. Well, you know, we're going to subpoena the cameras, the recording, you know, from when you said that we hit your car. And then what is Tesla going to say? Oh, well, we've been lying. We don't really record that. Yeah, what are they going to fucking say? So that's how this is going to play out. That's how it would play out if I were in charge, which, of course, I'm not. I would demand an apology. I would demand that Tesla admit it made the whole fucking thing up. Or I would pursue this thing with that bankroll. And you know what? If he needs more money, there's more money out there for him.
Yeah, they've raised $92,000, I saw today, for him. And certainly that's what I would be going after, right? I would be going after any type of, you know, FT called me and they wanted a quote for an article on it, you know, the donations to GoFundMe. And I said, all I said was I look forward to Tesla trying to prove what they allege in the TRO, because if they can't prove it, they're going to look fucking stupid. And if he goes the distance and he uses this newfound capital that he's raised here, and now it's kind of like Tesla short sellers almost have this Lawrence Fossey as their general counsel, right? Fossey has 30 years of experience as a trial lawyer. He's got a JD from Yale. He's a very accomplished and very competent lawyer, you know, and he's kind of stepped in, and I'm sure maybe he's even helped out in helping him find a competent representation for this matter. He's not representing him, but they kind of got a guy on their side that knows the law, right? So with the bankroll, like you're saying, and maybe under the guide of the counsel that they've retained, or maybe Montana Skeptic is helping him out, who knows? That would be what you would want, right? You would want to fight back vigorously and make the statement that this isn't acceptable going forward. If that's the case, if that's the case. The one thing I found interesting about the restraining order was when it came to the thing, oh, he hit the security guard in the parking lot. Tesla alleged that this guy was driving around the parking lot and ran his car into one of the security guards, causing, you know, a minor knee injury or something, that there was no police report and no hospital report submitted.
Hey, listen, Tesla has a history of this. They did it with some reporters who were staking out the Reno factory a couple of years, you know, the gigafactory a couple of years ago. They did it with those reporters, and apparently they viciously attacked him and yanked him out of the car and cut their seatbelts and this shit. And they did it with Martin Tripp, who was a whistleblower. They filed a false police report against him. Right now, it was I guess it wasn't proven that it was Tesla, right? Because they didn't trace whoever said, oh, he's got a gun, he's whatever. But it was false, and obviously, it, you know, I think it came from Tesla, and it'll come out because he's suing them. He's got lawyers there. So they have a history of doing this to people. So, you know, who are you going to believe in this case? You know, Skabushka, who is like a fucking, like, PhD in linguistics, you know, or a company, a vicious, foul stench of a company that has a history of doing this to other people who speak to truth, you know, about the company, right?
Yeah, and people are still donating to that patron. And just to let people know, not only did you also donate to the patron, but anybody that signs up for the for my podcast Patreon for the next 5 days between now and May 1st, I'm matching those patrons, and then I will take the match and then I will donate that to the Skabushka Legal Fund. So I just made my first donation for $1,113 a couple days ago to that fund. And Mark, I know that you also contributed to the fund also. So if you feel like doing a twofer, supporting the podcast and supporting Skabushka, you can always do that. And if not, you know, if you have to choose between the two, certainly support him first, because he's going to need the capital, I'm sure, to fight this battle.
Yeah. And by the way, you know, as Lawrence Fossey pointed out, you know, if next week or whatever Tesla settles and they say, hey, we made a mistake, we apologize for whatever, blah, 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 and, you know, of the 100,000, you know, it gets settled for 12,000, it costs whatever, that money will go back, Lawrence said, pro rata to the people who donated it. So, you know, it may not be gone forever anyway if you donate it. But
I hope that doesn't happen, because that'll be a huge pain in the ass for me to then try to get it back to. I may just have to file an 8K and say I'm using it for general corporate purposes at that point.
Well, you could be like Tesla, just never bother filing an 8K.
No, you know what I would
just
do?
I would fucking use it.
I would buy a fucking microphone or something that I desperately need. But
right.
Anyways, yeah. You can always go and support him, and that thing's almost at 100,000. I think it's going to go to six digits relatively soon. But should be interesting to see what happens.
Tesla was not prepared for that. And the guy that Lawrence hired, I don't know anything about him other than the website and some of these, but, you know, he's apparently very sharp. You know, he's a First Amendment lawyer, and, you know, he's not some super expensive firm that's going to eat through that 100 grand in, you know, the first 2 weeks. That's enough money to take this thing, you know, I think, to take this thing to the end. But as I said, if not, you know, there's more money there for this guy. As long as he's putting Tesla through discovery and exposing their lies, the money will be there, you know?
Yeah, I don't know how the litigation works on a TRO. I don't know if there's actual discovery. I mean, I know that there's an evidentiary hearing, but I'm not sure if it's litigated like a regular civil lawsuit where there's, you know, discovery and all those things. Is there?
Well, I don't know.
I think they could request. I think what could happen is the respondent could probably request to get all that shit, and I think Tesla could, instead of providing it, I don't think there's going to be any way for a judge or anything to compel them to provide it. I think in lieu of that, they would just drop the action, right?
Well, I guess, but Skabushka could sue them then for maligning his character.
Well, that would be the play, right? Then you sue a civil lawsuit, right? Because then you have a cause of action.
This is such a no-brainer. I mean, all Tesla does is brag about how much data it collects and how many pictures it takes from its car. I mean, half of that full self-driving thing was showing all the pictures that its cars were allegedly taking all the time, even in shadow mode. Great. Let's see the pictures of Skabushka ramming the car. And by the way, you know, I don't know Skabushka. Everything I've heard about him is good. If it turns out that Tesla's telling the truth, I will fully apologize.
Oh, I will too. Tesla,
you know, for once I should have believed you guys. I will too. It's easy to resolve. Let's see the footage. If you don't have the footage, as far as I'm concerned, you're either lying about him, or the much bigger lie is your whole shadow mode and you know, we collect
The burden of proof's on the company to prove it, right? They've made the allegation, so the burden of proof's on them. And we'll give it the same burden of proof as a civil matter and just say preponderance of the evidence, right? Just show me something aside from an allegation that proves what you're saying. And you can't tell me that they don't have security footage from the parking lot, or they don't have, you know, footage from this car. They don't have, you know, the only thing that worries me is, like, are they going to be able to manufacture some type of shit on, you know, because Tesla has the software at the car, right? So they're going to be able to point to something in the programming and say, here's where the car, you know, got infringed upon from the right side, and maybe it didn't happen. You know, that would be interesting. But certainly, yeah, if they can prove beyond a reasonable doubt that they're right, and not only will I apologize, but I would go on record and say that that's the worst possible thing that fucking short sellers need. Because, you know, as a short seller, look, everybody fucking hates you already, right? Because you're a skeptic and you're pissing on their Cheerios and raining on their parade. So I think as a short seller, it's even more important to be as honest as possible and go about things in a calculated and clinical way. And so I think that, you know, part of the reason I had beef with Jim Cramer for admitting to actual market manipulation on camera some years back as a short seller is that he's ruining it for the rest of the short sellers that are trying to go by it honestly. And you may have a foul fucking mouth, which you definitely do, but, you know, your analysis and your analysis of the situation and the investment thesis that you've arrived upon has been based on, you know, trying to seek out irrefutable facts and place them together and create a valuation that way. And as far as I know, you know, you haven't gone out and you haven't lied about anything. That would be doing us a disservice if that's what happened.
Yeah, of course. I mean, look, people have it backwards, so don't understand markets and shorting stocks. And they think like, oh, you know, like I must throw a dart at something, short it randomly, and then come up with a bunch of reasons. No. I'm short it because I come across all these reasons and I'm like, these are good reasons. I'm going to short this thing. And anything I say, if it's not opinion, like, yeah, it's opinion. If I say, oh, I think that the Taycan is going to crush the, you know, the Model S. And even that's not entirely opinion, because supposedly they have over 20,000 reservations for it already. But that's one thing. But, you know, otherwise facts are facts. I mean, you know, what they call FUD is like, call it well-founded opinion, but if you got another opinion, fine, you know?
Yeah, somebody that's a, like, major investor, I can't remember who it was, somebody just put something out the other day on the long side, maybe it was Gerber, but somebody just said FUD, you know, and I'm like, how could you even call it FUD? Like, you know, at this point, are you just throwing around
anyone
that term? You know, when
phrase,
I used to say FUD, yeah. Mark, I used to say FUD before I understood how the capital markets worked, when I invested in a bunch of garbage companies and there were a bunch of people telling the truth about them on message boards.
Yeah.
And I would say, oh, this is fear. This is fear, uncertainty, and doubt, because I didn't know. I was blinded by the fact that it was actually the truth. And I, you know, as much as I was trying to get it stuffed down my throat, you know, all I was seeing, all I was seeing was like, oh, this is a hit piece, you know, or like, this is, you know, this is FUD. But, you know, people have to learn the hard way. And the worst part is people that get their ass kicked and then they don't get wise to, like, oh, okay, like, this is how shit works. Or maybe I should learn about equity valuation. The people that are just continually, you know, just are bag holders forever. They don't understand it and they never will. And they're just running from one fucking, you know, hornet's nest to the next one, just getting killed.
I mean, everybody in this business or game or what or hobby or whatever pays their tuition. Fuck, I certainly paid enough tuition. But the secret is, if you pay the tuition, you know, learn something from it, right? You know, walk out of there having and say, you know, I lost money on this, but I learned X, Y, and Z. But if you fall for these scams one after another, and you keep paying to, I mean, at that point, you know, drop out of school. You know, just give up. You know,
so what's Mark Spiegel looking for going forward? I mean, what's the next catalyst on your radar, and what are you looking for going forward?
I mean, look, t- Tesla is a busted growth story, right? So my guess is that they'll come up with a way to do an ugly financing, and, you know, maybe a series of ugly financing, and, you know, we just get a long, slow decline. Or maybe we get, it's 247 now, right? Maybe we get a fast decline, you know, to 150 by the end of the year. And then it takes another 2 years to get to whatever. And eventually they just run out of money, you know? So, or, you know, the wild card is all the investigations going on, you know, Justice Department. Yesterday, that guy Aaron, I forget his Twitter
name. Aaron
handle,
Greenspan, Plainsight.
Plainsight broke the FTC investigation story because they responded to it. I mean, what they do on the way they lyingly talk about their car prices, it's a fucking joke. They're already banned from doing that, I think, in Germany.
I saw in another country, yeah. They list the price and then they say, all right, gas savings. You know, they just, you know, arbitrarily cut $4,000 off the price and say,
yeah,
you're paying $35, but really when you got to cut the check, it's $40,000. Like, how are you allowed to do that? I mean, that's just, and let's just go to FTC real quick, Mark. Aside from that, what else could the FTC be investigating? Well, how about all of the warranty claims? How about all of the service claims? I mean, you think we've been so busy talking about the SEC.
How about the autopilot claims? Autopilot, you know, the safety part of it is NHTSA, but the marketing part of it, I assume, is FTC. Right? You're claiming that you're selling people something that you're not selling them.
Between the SEC, the DOJ, the FTC, and the NHTSA, how has somebody not honestly, though? I mean, you could make a case for all of those regulatory agencies getting involved here.
Well, you know, Jim Chanos says that these, you know, I forget his exact phrase, but it's, you know, the way I say it is, you know, these people are cleanup crews. They're not demolition crews, right?
Right.
Chanos says they're not whatever. They're archaeologists. You know, they come in afterwards, and that's when everybody, you know, gets indicted and charged with shit and sometimes goes to jail or whatever. And, you know, they're just behind the curve. But you'd think with all these agencies, someone wouldn't be behind the curve. I don't have an answer. No one, it's one of the great mysteries, right? I mean, you know, does Musk have compromising pictures of every fucking bureaucrat? And I don't know. I mean,
well, I think
that's
when his,
even for him, that would be impossible.
I think when his public persona, his image falls out of favor, I think then we'll see the tides turn. Because I think for years it has been a faux pas to go after him and to call him on his bullshit.
But, I mean, how is this NASA guy? What's his name? He's on Twitter. Jim Braden Dice or Braden Bice, whatever the fuck it is. How is he still praising Musk? This guy's putting astronauts' lives at stake in space capsules, right? And Musk, you know, goes on smoking that joint. And then there's all kinds of other
allegations
about drug use, which the government could very easily investigate. How could this guy still be praising him like that? I mean, what the fuck is going on there? You know, I don't know. Maybe it's not nefarious. Maybe all these people are just naive and stupid.
Yeah, know? Maybe we're wrong, Mark. You know, maybe we just got it wrong. Maybe the buyout. Maybe it is the Saudis. You know, as Gerber said, it's the Saudis.
I'm sure we're not. It's right. The famous Gerber comment. I'm sure that we're not wrong. I'm just, you know, maybe in attributing nefarious things to these issues, to these situations, maybe it's just complete and total incompetence
that could
on
be
the part of these agencies, you know. So I don't want to be too tinfoil hat. I mean, but I'll say this, and I said this morning on Twitter, just having studied Musk pretty carefully. And knowing from personal experience that he does try to dig stuff up on people and send people after you, and he's done this to multiple other people, you know, if he could figure out a way to dig stuff up on some bureaucrat or, you know, some sovereign wealth fund manager, like, hey, put $2 billion in my company or we're going to expose whatever, I don't doubt that he would do it if he could do it. You know, now could he do it? I don't know. So,
but as I also said
on Twitter, and you know, none of those people would be out there. But if you are listening to this, rather than acquiescing and you'll get caught anyway, and whatever, you know, your reputation will be ruined anyway, I'm sure there's a lot of stuff you could dig up on him out there. So fight fire with fire. Don't give into it if something like that would happen. And I'm not saying it's happening. You know, maybe it's tinfoil hattish, but it's not entirely, as I said, because we know he's got these people, right? So,
well, it certainly made a statement when the Skabushka thing happened and they put together 90 grand in 3 or 4 days. That shows me that, you know, there is, you know, nobody worth $22 billion on the other side of the trade like Musk is, but I think some people have certainly had enough. And it also feels like the number...
A theoretical $22 billion.
Right. But it feels like the number of these Tesla Q people and the number of critics continues to grow. So I think, you know, I think in that regard, you're in good company, and I think that company's just going to grow. But anyways, listen, yep. Mark, want to thank you so much for coming on again, man. Hopefully we can touch base maybe in a couple months or the next time something goes horribly wrong or horribly good.
Well, you know, you always say it'll be a couple of months, and then Tesla does something else completely fucking insane just when we thought they couldn't top themselves. They do, and it turns out to be, you know, a few weeks.
Yeah, you never know, Mark. The next time I could have you on, you could be doing your apology tour, you know, the Saudis.
Listen, I will. You know, when people tell me I'm wrong, I like, yeah, I was wrong. I admit it. And then I just move on. It's much easier than trying to, you know, protect your fragile ego and refuse to acknowledge you were wrong.
Right. And less to remember, you know?
Well, that lying is different. But admitting you're wrong, those are two different things. So, yeah, I mean, tell the truth and move on. And if you're wrong, admit you're wrong. And, you know, you learn something from it. So, and, yeah, this was fun. Thank you a lot. And I look forward to listening to the show. And, you know, as I said, you know, you and I, we should just do like a regular recap. It doesn't have to be about Tesla. It can be whatever because
it would just be
fun to talk about.
Well,
markets,
when the Tesla thing's over and done with, then we'll do a regular, you know, we'll do a once a month catch up and recap.
Yeah, it'd be great.
Just talk about life in general. Well, that was the one, the only foul-mouthed Mark Spiegel letting it fly on the QTR podcast. I'm going to be back early next week. Actually, mid next week. I got Dave Collum coming back on the podcast, which I'm fucking super stoked about. One more reminder, too, to anybody that signs up as a patron between now and May 1st. I'm matching those patrons and donating the match to the Skabushka Legal Fund. Even if you just want to join as a patron anyways, not for that purpose, the same exact thing will happen. Want to thank you guys for listening, as always. But for right now, it is 6 o'clock. My goddamn day is finally over. I am the fuck out of here. Peace!